welcome to Everyday Sublime. This is your host, Josh Summers, and it's a pleasure and honor to have your attention. In this episode, I'm sharing a talk I gave this morning where I look at I share a story from Herbie Hancock where he learned something very profound about music and life from his band leader at the time, Miles Davis. It's one of the most amazing jazz dharma lessons I think I've ever heard. So I'll be sharing that with you. And I just want to say that this podcast is made freely available by the generosity of the members in the Riverbird Sangha. And that Sangha is an online practice community that Terry and I facilitate each week with 4 weekly classes in meditation, yang yoga, yin yoga, and qigong. If you can't attend those classes live, we place the replays of those classes in our membership library, along with lots of tutorials, workshops, practice etudes, ways that we can help support your practice. So if you'd like to support your practice and support the podcast work here, please do consider joining the Sangha. We have a sliding scale membership fee starting at $25 for a scholarship fee per month. We really thank you for your support. You can also support the show or our work by sharing an episode of the podcast that you might like, or consider taking a training with us. I mentioned a training at the beginning of this talk. The link for that is in the show notes, as well as the link for our Sangha membership. We also have a link there for a free copy of my ebook, The What, Why, and How of Yin Yoga. So all that said, I hope you settle back, maybe in a few yin poses or in a meditation pose or out for a quiet walk with yourself. But I hope you enjoy today's reflections. They stirred a lot of interesting discussion and conversation in the live group that met with me, as they always do on Mondays at 7 a.m. Eastern Standard. But I'd love to hear your feedback. Let me know. You can shoot me an email at josh@joshsummers.net. And without further ado, I hope you enjoy today's talk, Wrong Chord Right. Welcome to everybody joining our call. And if you're coming in over the replay and the video library, welcome. I didn't necessarily get to welcome everyone personally, but it's good to have you all here. So as you settle yourself in, I just want to, just a couple housekeeping announcements. One is that on March 15th, which is a week from this Friday, Terry and I will be launching a new 20-hour course / training. And I'll mention why I'm calling it a course / training, in our Qi cultivation series. And one of the things we're trying to communicate, it's not so easy to communicate, is that this can be taken as a standalone little course, a 4-week course. And the reason why you might be interested in taking it as a 4-week course is that it's the foundation of a practice for the yang side of our yoga life. It's not yang yoga in terms of sun salutations and like downward dogs and things like that. It's exploring the yang side of an embodied practice, which will be the foundation of all strength capabilities, like strength training for the body. And last year, at some point towards the end of last year, we did an informal survey here. How many people would like something on strength training? And a lot of hands went up. And so this upcoming 4-week, it will be the foundational elements of building a personal strength program for yourself. And it's looking at how we stabilize, mobilize safely the spine, and from the spine outwards to move our whole body. And we're calling it purifying water, the flow of qi cultivation, because from an energetic perspective in Chinese medicine, when we move well, we are pumping fresh chi, blood, and fluid through the body. And so the water element of our body is circulated, it's cleaned, the lymphatic system is able to work well. And when the water is flowing, when the water element of our body is flowing well, that becomes a medium through which our subtle chi, our subtle energy flows really well. If you're interested, you can just go onto our site under the events or the course tab, and you'll see purifying water, which will begin in a week from Friday. And we're very excited about it. The other housekeeping update is one more of a personal note. I don't think I've given you an update on my niece's status in a while, been a few weeks. And I don't have a ton of new things to say. Last we knew, there were some signs that the tumor had progressed to her spine. And she's in the middle right now of another round of radiation, which will hopefully keep that at bay and allow her, hopefully in a month or so, to go to Seattle for a trial, which is really the best chance she has of surviving or staying alive for the moment. So it's a continuation of holding the precarious and difficult state of her health and her life. And I say that again with full consciousness of the condition of our world. I felt over the weekend that I experienced a lot of overwhelm with the way things are going right now. Weekends tend to give me a little more time to look into the papers, to the articles and magazines that I read online. And whether it's the war in Gaza, the war in the Ukraine, the increasing, when I say increasing, I mean over the last several 6 years plus, but the increasing tribalism and civic life, political life in the United States and elsewhere, climate catastrophes. I remember just the other day just seeing headlines that parts of California were going to be receiving in excess of 3 feet of snow. And just apocalyptic stuff everywhere. I'm aware that as people tend to be who are interested in yoga and meditation and cultivation of noble qualities, when people do these practices, they become a bit more sensitive to things. And I'm imagining that, like me, many of you are feeling pretty rattled, overwhelmed yourselves, and in a place of, what do we do? How are we going to get through this? And I don't have the answers, but I do want to acknowledge what the climate of our world is like, and in small ways, try to contextualize our practice as the beginning of a response. So for today's talk, I wanted to share something that was recently shared with me. And it came via a member of the Sangha who doesn't often get to make live sessions, but I've known him for a while. And he sent me a short clip on YouTube of the American jazz pianist Herbie Hancock talking about an experience he had while playing in the Miles Davis Quintet. And so the year was 1963, or maybe 1964. Herbie wasn't quite clear on which year it was, but he remembers they were in the band, the Miles Davis group was playing in Stuttgart, Germany. And they were playing a very famous composition by Miles Davis called So What, which was released in the late 50s on the album Kind of Blue, which in my eyes is one of the greatest records of any genre ever released. And So What is the song that they were playing in Stuttgart. So What's a very simple song in a kind of a minimalist way, and really only has two main chords. But as Herbie tells the story, during the solo that Miles Davis was taking, and Herbie was playing piano as accompaniment, but during Miles' solo, in Herbie's words, he says, I played a wrong chord. And it was shocking. It shocked him. And it wasn't sure what exactly Miles' response was, but Miles stopped playing. He looked over at Herbie and paused for a few moments. And then when Miles brought his trumpet back to his mouth and continued to play, he played something that made the wrong chord work. He played something that resolved the tensions of the wrong chord into something that it was integrated and fit beautifully within the overall piece of music. And I jotted down just a few lines that Herbie said. He said, Miles didn't hear it as a mistake. Miles heard it as something that had happened, an event. It was part of reality. And he dealt with it. And the way Herbie tells the story, he said, at that moment on the bandstand, he said, I learned something very, very important about life. Taught to him by Miles, how to take, in Herbie's language, a poison and turn it into a medicine. Whatever situation we have, whatever situation we discover ourselves in, how do we make that something constructive? How do we make that something constructive? And I wanted to start today's session with that story of taking quote unquote wrong notes, reframing them as an event, reality that's happening, and how a great artist can respond and transform that quote-unquote incorrectness into something artistically beautiful, redeeming. I want to begin today's reflection or practice with that story because in my mind, this is the essence of generosity. And as I mentioned over the newsletter and towards last week, one of the themes that we'll be exploring, that I'm planning to explore with you all this year, is the theme of the qualities of heart that grow or expand or get nurtured in our practice. And those qualities of heart in different spiritual traditions get different terms, but one of them is called the paramis. Paramis referring to the perfections of the heart. And whenever I hear the word perfection, it stokes my own perfectionist mindset that feels inadequate, that feels unable to meet the task. So don't get so hung up on the word perfection. Think of these qualities as innate capacities that we're supporting to grow. We're helping them grow by virtue of our attention, our care, our inclination towards them. But the first of these qualities is generosity. And as I reflected in the newsletter, oftentimes generosity is associated with a kind of material giving. What are we giving of ourselves in terms of material resources, whether it's money or food or clothing? And those obviously fall under the rubric of the heading of generosity, but as a practice, as something to weave or to explore in our practice, I imagine that you might have the experience like me that when you're meditating, your mind goes off into something and it can feel like a mistake, or it can feel like a distraction, or it can feel like an irrelevancy, or the mind is getting spun into a cycle of something, taking you away from where you want to go, taking you out of the progression of the practice. And at a base level, if we approach our practice with the mastery of Miles Davis, how do we take whatever event arises in the mind . Listen to it, get clear on what it was, and then respond in a way such that our practice grows. Such that there's something ennobling about our response, something creatively redeeming about our response. And I'm trying to frame this story of Miles Davis and Herbie Hancock in terms of the dynamics of our meditation practice, because then our practice becomes a way of nurturing that kind of mindset. Nurturing a mindset that doesn't get caught, will be aware of judging, but doesn't get caught in good and bad judgments, but is seeing those good and bad judgments and as a broader creative, artistic view that can transform what's occurring. And I want to suggest that that's because I'm not going to say everything I want to try to say today, because we have a whole month to explore the theme of generosity in practice and generosity in life. But I want to start at this kind of seedling level within our practice of how do we practice generously with ourselves as a precondition, as a prerequisite, or as a foundation for growing generosity in our relationships. With others, with the environment. So just to review, one of the themes that we've been exploring is when we are meditating and we find our mind has produced something that's quote unquote offbeat or off key. The mind plays a chord that can sound discordant, brings tension into our being. Whether it's a grief, a sorrow, an anger, there's lots to be angry about right now. Whatever discordant chord our mind may play, one of the little tips I've been playing with myself a lot is when we wake up to that occurrence, I've spoken about the value of smiling. And I've been thinking a little bit more about that. And on one level, you know, you relax the facial muscles, and I told a story about how the heart spirit in Chinese medicine manifests in the face. So the spirit manifests in the face. And when we relax the face and we bring a soft smile to the face, there's a soothing side of that for the heart. And our awareness can then rest in our heart more easily. So that's one side of it, part of the smile. But what I want to mention today is that like Miles, if we want to be able to have a creative, adaptive response to events, we have to be agile. We have to be spontaneous. Spontaneity is a theme that Terry and I will be talking quite a bit about in the upcoming course. It ties to the Chinese Taoist conception of wu wei, or effortless effort, non-doing, spontaneity. And one thing I found is that if my face is in a frown, it tends to mean my mind is locked into a negative view and is essentially boxed within that view. And it's very difficult to see other options, other opportunities, other modes of responding. So what I'm trying to get to is that I feel that the smile, the soft smile, is a way of keeping your mind open to potentials, keeping your view, your vista of what's available, receptive to creative insights, and with practice, spontaneous, improvised responses that might surprise you, might surprise others, but are outside of a reactive, fixed way of responding. And I want to keep it really simple today and just leave it at that. We've talked about the smile before, but today when we come to our sitting and we look at our body and mind and we settle in, if we can catch when, again, a sound of discord, an energy of discord arises, check in with, well, what's our face doing in that moment? And that's not to stop the energy of discord, but to reset our whole being through the face is one of remembering this is a moment of opportunity. It's a moment of creative potential. And it may seem small. It may seem really small, but every time this occurs, we're practicing a lightness of foot, a lightness of heart, preparing us to be able to respond in daily life situations with some practice framework to meet the bad driver, the rude person, the seemingly crazy political party. I'm not being partisan here. It could be either way. But to prepare ourselves to come to our life with a creative mindset. And if there's one thing I think humanity needs is a creative culture, a culture of creativity. Because the old ways and the ways that have been going for a long time are, if they're not over the cliff yet, they've got two wheels still on the cliff and two wheels are over.
Okay, everyone, as I always try to say, I hope the reflections here support your practice. I hope they open up some avenues for your own exploration. One of the things that many members commented on after the talk was that they feel they can see in their own practice their own stages of development and how they're moving into a more authentic personal ownership of their practice. And that was music to my ears. And if you'd like ways of supporting your own development in that direction, do consider joining the Riverbird Sangha. There's a link for you in the show notes. We look forward to practicing with you. And until the next episode, stay safe, stay strong, keep practicing, and we'll see you soon. All my best.